Hello, everybody. Jan Rutherford here from Self-Reliant Leadership. And I am so excited to bring a very special show to you today with my good friends from across the pond. And some of you have seen some of the LinkedIn posts that we put out there about this book that we're coming out with on April 9th. And there it is, right there, Purposeful People. And I've got three good friends and distinguished guests on the show today. And let me bring those on. And there we go. And let me introduce everybody to you. Chris Payton is the leader of what we've done, putting this book together. He's a former Royal Marine and defense advisor turned executive coach and advisor and consultant and business owner. And we've got Sarah Downs, who started her career actually as a trauma nurse and has become a social media marketing guru extraordinaire. And we've got Philip, and I'm not even going to try to say all of the letters in your name, Philip, but you started out actually in the diamond mining business, and you've now become an innovation coach, and we're really glad to have all three of you on the show. So thank you. Thank you for being here. So this book, Purposeful People, Chris, tell us about the genesis. How did this whole thing get started? All I know is I got an email from you, and it said, hey, get involved and send me money.
Well, it would be a shame to change your life's pattern, Jan, to be honest. But yeah, I was, through a network, was introduced to somebody called Karen McDermott. And Karen runs a fabulous publishing company. And I got talking to Karen about a new model that she had, that she'd been running pretty successfully, of putting together anthology authors. Now, you know, I'd always been playing around a little bit with writing and doing the odd article here and there or magazine article, but I had always thought about doing something around a book, but I knew that I am not the world's best writer. I don't think that anybody would ever accuse me of writing something that would grip them and hold their attention, although I do try. And I really like the idea of this anthology of working together with 19 other people to put together a book. So I started to have a think about what it was I wanted to achieve with the book. And I guess the thing that drives me the most is I like being in the background helping other people. I like quietly putting them up onto the pedestal and seeing them do really well. So I wanted to create a book that anybody could pick up and read from any sort of background, and it would help them in some way. So it was all about purpose, giving them purpose and sharing our purpose with them. And then it became about, well, who do I invite to come along and help me with this? So I tried to go out to people who I felt I connected with on that same level. Who were the people I knew that had a genuine sense of purpose, who wanted to make a difference, who liked helping other people? And I pulled up a list and got in touch with people like yourselves and Sarah and Philip, and to say, you know, would you like to come onto this book and help? And then the final piece that came into play was essentially around the charities and deciding that actually what we do is self-fund this between all of us, so that four selected charities that were dear to the hearts of everybody involved could benefit as much as possible.
Yeah, and those four charities are what, Chris?
So they're a homelessness charity, a charity that supports homelessness action called Shelter. There's the Cancer Fund for Children. There is an organization called Samton, which is all about meditation and psychological, mental well-being and physical well-being. And then there's also SAFA, which is a veterans and veterans families association.
Yep. And we just got our first comment here from Yukemi, Sarah's partner in business. And thanks for the shout out, Yukemi. That's very sweet of you. And Chris, I'm wondering, an easier thing would be You know, you took 19 very busy people. That's like herding cats. An easier thing would have been to pick three or four people and do that. What made you think, you know, hey, let me get, you know, 19 other people and we'll write 20 chapters and you'll pull, you know, that kind of, that's hard work. What made you think that was the approach you'd go?
Yeah, I think to be honest, Karen and her team have made the whole process much easier than I would have anticipated. So I've got to give a lot of credit to Karen and her team for pulling stuff together. But it has been at times a bit challenging to get everybody to meet deadlines and that side of things. But what I'm most big on it when I'm doing my consultancy is around diversity of thought. Mm-hmm. It's about bringing in all the different perspectives. And for me, if I wrote this with just two or three other people, then you're only really getting a couple of different lenses. And actually, because we're quite similar, you're probably only getting one lens. Whereas with 19 other people that are different to me, with different backgrounds, work in different industries, do different things, then you're going to get, you know, at least 17, 18, if not 19, very different perspectives and divergence of thinking, and it'll really help the reader.
Yeah. Thing you mentioned, diversity of thought on International Women's Day, which is today. And just this morning here in the United States, they mentioned that there's 2 million women in the last year that have come out of the workforce. And the long-term effect of that is going to be 150 years, is what they're saying. That sort of long stream effect. So let me go over to Sarah and Philip. So Sarah, what made you decide to participate? Because I know your plate is already full.
Yeah, well, like you, Jan, I got the email from Chris. And Chris doesn't ask very often. So when someone that you respect and you've worked with does ask, you take it seriously. But I got to admit, you know, I'm not a writer. Usually. And it was one of those projects where as soon as he said we're going to raise money for charity, I'm a sucker. And I was like, yes, okay, I want to be part of this. The minute I said yes, I was like, oh no, what have I done? and it's been a learning for me as an individual. I've probably learned a lot about myself along the way. Even just trying to compile what does that chapter look like. Chris gave us a little bit of a steer, as you know, to what he thought we could write on. But I'm chapter number two. And for me, that was quite scary. I would have preferred to be in like 12 or 15, you know, deeper into the book. My chapter is all about the road to finding your purpose. And I really talk through a lot of my personal journey on finding my own purpose and giving some, I guess, tips to others to do the same. And I'm really proud to be part of this project and really grateful to Chris for giving me the opportunity. And I really do think this book's going to help a lot of people out there, lots of different disciplines, different walks of life, and probably perfect timing as well, Chris, in 2020, 2021, with everything that's going on in the world. I think it's going to help a lot of people.
Yeah. What, before I go to Philip, what I learned in this process, you're making me think of what I've learned. When I wrote my book, it took 4.5 years. And part of it was just figuring out the direction. It wasn't the act of just sitting down and writing. It was like, well, how's this all come together? And what I loved about Chris's leadership is it was focused and it was really easy to sit down and work and get it done. And I thought, gosh, you know, if I had had that sort of focus and discipline initially, it wouldn't have taken me 4.5 years to get, you know, a tiny little book out.
I remember getting to December or maybe late November, and we had to have the deadline submission was Christmas. And I met one of the other authors, Bob Keeler, who also lives in Aberdeen. We met for a coffee, and I remember saying, Bob, I haven't finished my chapter yet. And he's going, it's okay, don't worry. I was like, but I am worried. I didn't want to let anyone down. And I remember feeling nervous with the first submission. So it's been a great experience.
Yeah, very good. And Philip, how about you? What made you decide to participate?
Yes, well, I think as Sarah says, it's the call from Chris was enough to sort of pay attention and to think long and hard about the opportunity. And I think initially I was probably quite daunted. I still am, truth be told, but because yourself, Jan, Chris, Sarah, you know, you've in your own rights, you have great stories to tell. I guess I was kind of wondering how I could make a contribution, but it didn't really take me too long to think about some connections to things that really matter to me. So it's interesting. I mean, the book is Purposeful People. I don't count myself necessarily amongst those as a description, but I think that I recognize the power of purpose in driving a team, keeping you focused, making things that you do meaningful. And so for me, actually, the very theme of the book was itself a kind of driver to get it done. And I think to Sarah's point, you know, I think Bob's a very accomplished, Bob Keeler's accomplished leader of some significant organizations and focuses on values and talks passionately about those. And I think it's getting connected with passion that has made it easy. And the challenge for me probably was that my exposure to writing is usually either technical or it's in the form of poetry, which is my kind of hobby. And poems are generally, you know, reasonably sort of short form. So I guess that was my challenge, is how do I take what I have to say around leadership and its impact on innovation in particular, which is the field that I work in, and also more broadly, the culture of an organization that that leaders often want to become more innovative. So that was, I guess, the thread that I had to kind of figure out through my chapter.
Yeah, very good. And just for a point of reference for our viewers, you're in South Africa, correct?
I'm in sunny Edinburgh, as it happens.
Oh, Edinburgh. Oh, I'm in Edinburgh. That is opposite of South Africa.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. At least weather-wise. But so I'm afraid I'm not sitting here in streaming sunshine, which I'd love to be, but there's so many other wonderful things about Scotland. So, yeah, no, from South Africa originally, grew up there, and my career originally with De Beers, the mining group that you mentioned, was originally there. Yeah.
Well, there's a great show running on Showtime right now, Men in Kilts. And it's basically a tour of Scotland from the actors from Outlander. That's good. That's good fun. It's total advertisement for the TV show, but it's fun to see the beautiful scenery of Scotland.
So. Yeah, that's magnificent. And that scenery doesn't include seeing my legs. I don't own a kilt, but quite respect for my comrades here in Scotland, though.
There you go. Oh, nice. let me go back to Chris. Chris, you know, when you start writing a book, you know, the first thing somebody will ask is, you know, who are you trying to reach, and you know, what's the message that you're trying to convey to them? And oftentimes, you know, they'll say, hey, what is it, you know, what's your big idea that you're so passionate about that you've got to get it out there? So I'm wondering if you could kind of, you know, help us understand from a project perspective of, you know, the audience and the overall message.
Yeah, sure. The overall message essentially is that I find it very hard that when people live uncertain lives or are stressed or are worried. So my, if you like, purpose and what really drives me is trying to give people as stable a life as they can have and enjoy their life as much as they can. I get very upset when people are upset or are unhappy. So I thought, right, well, what I want to do with this book is to give as many people as possible the sort of insights that actually sometimes, you know, what they're facing, other people have faced, this is how other people have handled it, or here's some tips and suggestions about how you might go about it. the problem with that is that it then made it so broad, you're sort of sitting there and you're quite right in saying, well, who is the audience for this? Because it could literally be anybody. As it happened, when I went to the different authors for each of the chapters and said, what would you like to write on? Now, I've got an idea what I think you might write on, but what is it that you would really like to write about? It started to become clear that there were three thematic areas that were coming up. There was something all around self and around the individual. There were themes around teams and about how I work within a team, being part of a team or leading a team. And then there was stuff that was more organizational and the purpose of organizations and how organizations perform better. That's essentially, the book is, you're going to be useful for anybody who wants to improve how they think about themselves, about their own mindfulness and their own purpose and how they want to live their own lives. It can be useful for anybody operating in a team and in a team environment, or somebody that's thinking from an organizational perspective. So from pretty senior executives right the way down to individuals. But I think it's also going to be really useful for people in the emergency services, you know, in the fire services, police forces, medical world, just because of the range and breadth of information and thoughts that are in there.
Yeah. And I know, you know, we put together a few bullets on what we're hoping people take away from this, as Karen McDermott asked. A couple of the points were finding your purpose when all seems lost. And I think many of us have been there over the past year, lost at some point. Self-belief and being kind to yourself. And I can't tell you how many times at the end of a coaching call, I'll say to someone, hey, do me a favor, you know, be nice to that person in the mirror. They're a good person. Leadership by little things. And I just finished reviewing The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell. And it reminded me that it's the little things that make the big differences often. Dealing with imposter syndrome, you know, who am I to be up here? And then the other part that, you know, probably a lot of us have conversations with the senior leaders is creating a safe space for courageous conversations, which these days are increasingly difficult because those conversations take place over these tiny little screens. To give the viewers a little bit of a preview, I'd love to have you guys talk a little bit about your chapters. And I'm finding a quote here from yours, Sarah. You say, finding purpose doesn't always come from a singular event. For many of us, it can take a number of years and searching within before becoming clear on what impact we want to make in the world. Tell us a little bit about your chapter. We got you muted there, Sarah.
Sorry. There you go. I think that quote sums it up quite well. I go back into my childhood when I decided what I was going to write on. I started asking myself some pretty deep questions and trying to go back into where did my own purpose really come from? Like, what was my first memory of feeling inspired and moved, and, you know, and then what different experiences did I go through in life through, you know, being a child, being a teenager, then going into my nursing career, having to leave my nursing career when I was diagnosed with epilepsy, and at that point feeling like I'd lost purpose, and then finding it again. This purpose was the same. I just had to almost, you know, find it again. And I talk to finding purpose, but I also now, I guess, use the lessons I've learned to help others. So quite often in business, I'll be doing work with a CEO or a managing director who has lost their way, and they maybe feel like they resent their business instead of it still feeling like their baby. And a lot of these conversations is about going back to purpose. You know, why did you do this in the first place? What inspired you? You know, where did this come from? And trying to remember, you know, that point in time. and taking it from there. So I use my personal story a lot within the chapter, as I know many of the authors have, to really try and pull through some of the lessons that I've learned along the way to help others.
Yeah. You know, Sarah, I personally, I'm reminded of a conversation you and I had last week where you asked me a question and I said, well, I could see A and or B. And you let a little bit of time go by and then you came back and you go, well, which you've got a preference on A or B, which is it? And the way you asked was very gentle and kind. And it was, you know, to really pull out, you know, that purpose, like, hey, there's something behind here, something that you really want. You just need a little prodding. And, yeah. And I really love that about the way that you work and your approach. And, you know, it just comes through that you are a trained nurse, you know, that caring that just comes through in the way that you relate to people and the way that you write and what you conveyed in your chapter. I can't wait for people to read it.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Philip, and going over to yours, the quote I pulled out was, effective innovation demands a blend of genders, cultures, hierarchies, education, and thinking styles. It's about collaboration in the widest sense of the word. So tell us about that quote in your chapter.
Mm. Yeah, it's I'm glad you, today, especially you bring that particular quote up in the context of recognizing women all over the world. And I think that well, again, like Sarah, what I've come to realize that's been important to me in my life is, I suppose, the way that my own father, who was a military guy, was very careful to encourage me to try things, you know, to come up with ideas and experiment. And even if I failed at them, if there were hobbies that didn't work out, or there were things that I started and kind of they didn't work as I'd planned, he was gentle about that learning and that debriefing. And I guess, you know, as in my earliest career, which was as a surveyor, a hydrographic surveyor offshore with De Beers Marine, that was doing pretty innovative underwater mining offshore on the coast of Africa, was again another place where I came to value the idea of collaboration, the idea of getting different perspectives on things. And you had in that environment people from, you know, who were North Sea divers who came to work with us, and we had people who were specialists in geology, very, very niche areas of geology, and you had engineers, marine engineers, you had people who'd come across from Holland and worked in the sort of in the kind of marine and dredging space. And so I guess in that environment things were possible, and the culture of the organization was hugely supportive and geared towards, I guess, just thinking about what might be possible. So looking at innovation very broadly. And I guess that's really behind the work I do today, to sort of fast forward to where we are now. Is, you know, we fundamentally believe that collaboration, that stimulus, looking for ideas from outside of your team and in your own experience, and the reduction of fear, taking fear away, fear of experimentation, fear of failure. Mm. Those three things are absolutely vital for any organization that wants to kind of see its way out of the kind of crisis that we're in at the moment, and indeed to thrive beyond that.
Wow. It's interesting you remind me, Philip. We had a fellow from Northern Ireland on the podcast recently, who is an expert in micro expressions, and you know, kind of like you know, a human lie detector, if you will.
Yeah.
But not really. But I asked him about, hey, of all the things that we should read at work, what's the expressions that we should look for? Hmm. And it's funny, he said, fear. Fear is what shows up at work so much, and it shows up in these little tiny ways. But you think about from a leadership perspective, I mean, our whole goal is we've got to create a safe environment. And yeah. so many of the environments out there are not safe, are fear driven. And you know, we know it's toxic. It harms people's mental, physical, and emotional health. So interesting. Let me throw this question up. And Chris, maybe you can take a crack at it from Dagmar. The benefit of having a clear understanding of purpose. And maybe you can relate that to your chapter as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's about understanding what people would miss if you or what you provide wasn't there. That to me is the shortest definition of purpose. But it's also about what drives you, genuinely drives you, you know, inside. I think that, you know, it's interesting. I think I've only really worked out what my own purpose has come to in the last couple of years. I think I've been hunting around quite a bit before that. And it might sound odd from a former military person who spent nearly 18 years in the military, but for me, I find that I am at my best and I serve the best purpose when I am in the background, the quiet person in the background, helping other people do well. I'm best as a deputy, if you like, sometimes. And therefore, what I'm doing now, I've kind of stumbled into as consultancy and doing well because of how I am. But it's also that purpose around wanting people to live happier, more stable, safer lives, whether it be to deal with homelessness or just levels of stress and anxiety and things like that. So the more that I can help organizations do well, the more that the people in those organizations are likely to have stable employment, the more their families therefore feel more reassured and they start to have happier lives. So that's how I've gone about my own purpose. The piece within my chapter is essentially about safe space for bringing up challenge and to have those difficult conversations, because as Philip's just alluded to and Sarah before, you know, this is all about diversity of thinking. That's where the innovation is going to come from. That's where the ideas are going to come from as to how we can do better. And I came from a particular part of the military in the Royal Marines, where we had a very strong ethos of challenging. And it didn't matter what rank you had, you absolutely had the right and the mandate to ask questions. Mm-hmm. So for me, it just became normal to ask questions. We didn't really care what your gender, background, faith, beliefs were, how you were raised, where you came from, what government department you might be, what nationality you might be. All we were really interested is what can you bring to the table? What can you bring to the party? And I assumed that that was the way that all organizations operated. And it was a bit of a surprise to me, to be honest, when I came out of the military to find that it was almost exactly the opposite in lots of organizations that were quite streamlined, quite hierarchical, and people didn't feel they had the right to comment.
Yeah. Interesting. I had the opportunity and the privilege to interview Margaret Heffernan a few weeks ago, and she talked about how every team member should feel a duty to bring something different to the table. That if you're in agreement, then you don't need one of you. And it was just, you know, we've all heard that before, but it was the way that she was able to articulate it was so powerful and a great reminder. You know, I think about, you know, the value exercise I did for myself about 10 years ago. It was the most powerful thing I've ever done. And one of the things I often recommend as I start coaching people right off the bat. And you know, the whole idea of purposefulness was one of my three core values, that was so important. And in hindsight, I looked at things that I had done in my life and I thought some of those things didn't, you know, weren't as purposeful as the things that I'm doing now, but it took, you know, I'm a slow learner, I guess. It took a while to figure that out. Let me throw up a comment here from my friend, Shawnee. And this one's to you, Sarah. Thanks for sharing how you reinvented yourself when you hit the wall in your career after your diagnosis. When we hit a point in our lives where we can no longer do what we are doing, it's critical to know how to adapt in the new reality. Thank you for modeling that with your stay in this book. I'm excited to read it. And Shawnee is also was a combat medic and a military veteran, so she knows what your experience to some degree. And I know she's also shared with me offline that she was really thrilled with the charities that we chose to contribute to. That really meant a lot to her. So again, Shawnee, thank you for listening. Chris, the other thing I wanted to mention, you know, the quote, one of the quotes from your chapter is our social need to belong presents a problem when we need to create a safe space for constructive dissent and debate. It feels wrong to buck the trend of the group, to step out of line, to offer what may be perceived to be an unwelcome comment or challenge. And to me, that's one of the paradoxes sort of leadership is, you know, in a team, we have belonging, and yet a healthy team has good debate and dissent and disagreement. So how, and I'll throw this out to all three of you. I mean, how does one balance that, you know, these paradoxes?
Well, I guess because it's my chapter, I'll kick off and then I'll give the other two some time to think. But yeah, I mean, it is a tricky balance because we're hardwired to be part of the group and not to buck the group. Because in our dim and distant past, if you did something that was outside of the group, you generally got eaten by something else. Yeah. So you know, we're not comfortable with doing anything that's perceived to be outside of the group, and people still feel that. It is an interesting balance, like you say, Jan, because you are, as a leader, wanting to draw in other thoughts, other ideas. But I think some leaders, and this is where you sort of your Brené Brown type of talks come in, and you know, listening to what she has to say, the vulnerability piece starts to come in, because I think lots of leaders feel uncomfortable about asking for other opinions, for asking for challenge, because they see the challenge of the idea as being a challenge of themselves personally, because they associate themselves with the idea. And I think that is something that we have to disassociate ourselves from as leaders, that it's a critique of the idea, it's not a critique of ourselves.
Sarah and Philip, any thoughts there?
I just saw a comment come up and saw psychological safety. And I think that is so important. I know a lot of the work you do, Chris, is creating that psychologically safe space for our people to share and to challenge in a healthy way within organizations. And I'm the co-founding director of a business. We have a very small team, and I feel like in a smaller business, it can be a little bit easier to create that on almost a daily basis and ask for feedback and challenge, and people are just closer to the leaders on a daily basis. But I also consult into very large organizations where there is a very clear disconnect. And I think it is such a challenge for every single one of us that is a leader, whether that be in business or elsewhere, to get the balance right of creating that safe space and asking for the feedback and the challenge while also, you know, driving forward and keep that movement going as well. It's really difficult.
I think you're absolutely right, Sarah. And I think it's probably even harder now, isn't it, in environments today where teams come together, maybe not having ever met in real life yet, and have conversations that are slightly artificial. I think the flip side is, in some respects, it's easier to get the kind of quieter voices into the room, perhaps, so there might be an upside. But in a lot of the work we do in innovation in particular, you know, the role of leadership in creating the safe space, effectively creating the culture that you want to allow experimentation, to allow failure, etc. We kind of see that evidenced when a leader can say three things. Effectively, I don't know all the answers. I don't have all the answers. Secondly, I need help. So I need to look to somebody else to step up here. And I fail a lot. And to be able to say those three things authentically is very powerful, because the people around that leader will hear effectively an invitation to contribute, an invitation to collaborate, and in fact, an affirmation that it's okay not to, you know, not to win every one of these experiments, but to fail from time to time, as long as we're learning as we go along. And so those are kind of three phrases that we would, you know, look to leaders to think about, be thoughtful of, and figure out how do they show up, and how do they create that safe space for ultimately, in our context anyway, a culture for innovation.
Yeah, some great points, Philip. I found with the teams that I work with, very few are really good at what we call support seeking, asking for help, raising the white flag. And I always say to them that, boy, you're cheating the team out of, you know, an intrinsic reward. I mean, everybody wants to help somebody. And yeah, by not asking for help, you're taking that away from someone. And you're reducing the quality of the output.
Yeah.
My chapter is about, you know, my experiences running crucible expeditions with executives and military veterans, and I call it the five indomitable traits of a team. And what I try to do is capture, you know, what I've seen on all these expeditions, sort of the life cycle of a team coming together, and what happens. And what's interesting is out in the field, because there's nothing to prove, nothing to promote. And you know that, you know, people come together in some ways a lot faster because the environment really is safe. You know, mm-hmm. they're not worried about, you know, their reputation and what's going to happen. And, you know, I mean, they can really be their authentic selves. And a lot of them will come back and say, you know, I almost felt like a kid again. Like, it was so great that I got to just be myself, you know, for 4 days. And, you know, it's just interesting, because as you reflect, you know, all these people are the leaders that create the environments. They're like, well, what's stopping you from creating that sort of environment, you know, where people can be their authentic self and they can take risks and you know, figure out what's best. Part of, you know, what really comes as a big takeaway on those expeditions is the people that you have to slow down to speed up. And I think what all of us have been talking about today is, you know, part of being purposeful is really taking a step back and reflecting. I think that's if I were to kind of pick up on the common theme, it's a little bit of that. And I guess what we're asking, you know, the people viewing and people that, you know, potentially will purchase the book, is basically is to take a step back and read, you know, from 20 different people about being purposeful and have some perspectives. And I think, just like Shawnee mentioned, you know, what's threaded throughout this are stories. And that's, I think, what people relate to most strongly. Thoughts on that? You know, my hypothesis here that it's really about taking a step back to reflect and then, you know, move swiftly in that, you know, said direction. Go ahead, Chris.
I think you're absolutely right, Jana, but I think that people shouldn't underestimate that this isn't necessarily just about ourselves taking the time to do that. It's about everyone that works with us and around us. We can talk about creating the psychological safe space for things to happen. We can give people a demonstrable level of you know, of us doing that and living those values to encourage other people to do it. But still other people will find it difficult at first, particularly if we're in larger organizations. They'll still, even if you're demonstrating behaviors that are ones of, I want you to come back to me, I want you to be open, this is a psychologically safe space, they still feel uncomfortable. So that it's not just about us taking the time to bring that in, it's about the other people getting more comfortable with it. And I think that, actually, you know, this is something that takes time, and it takes quite a lot of time. And the organizations that I've seen struggle with this are the ones who will start it, they get it, they understand it, but then they feel that they're not achieving it quickly enough, and everybody just starts to revert to type when it starts to go wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, Sarah, what do you think?
Yeah, it's just touching on what you said about slowing down to speed up. And what I love about the way Chris and Karen have coordinated the book is that somebody doesn't really need to read it front to back. Excuse me. They could look at the chapters and decide what are they struggling with right now and use it as almost a directory of all these little bits of support, little nuggets of support to get them through each time they decide to slow down. So yeah. I just wanted to say that to anyone listening, because not everyone enjoys reading or, you know, may feel their time poor, etc. But I really do think the way the book has been laid out, that people can kind of pick and choose the chapters that are speaking to them the most. And hopefully it's within a certain amount of time, they will have read all 20. But I do think the way it's laid out, it will be easy to navigate the book as well.
Yeah, great point.
I think the other thing I'd add to that, Sarah, because that's well put, is that the various themes of which we've spoken already, but there are just a handful of themes that sort of thread their way through everybody's stories in this particular book, also allow you to approach a particular topic, whether it's leadership, whether it's self-reliance, from a number of different perspectives. Again, coming back to the point of the diversity that Chris wanted from this project, which I think is another way of kind of getting to that same opportunity to reflect through different people's experiences, which might resonate differently at different points of reading.
We're getting some great comments from some of the other authors of the chapters and some of the other listeners, and we appreciate all that. Well, we're coming toward the end of our time today. I'd love to just get your closing thoughts on this. And as we said at the very beginning, what we're hoping to do is help, create some awareness of why we're doing this. And again, and I'll kind of go first. And what I'm thrilled about is I really want to be around people who are trying their best to be selfless. And that's what I feel like, that this group represents, and what they're really trying to do is help other people learn from what they've been through and really be intentional and purposeful. And, as Chris said, it's interesting, after all these years, you've learned that you kind of like the deputy role, being in the background a little bit. And again, that it takes a long time sometimes to figure out where we best serve. And I had a mentor once ask me, he said, hey, here's the key question, Jan, for whose good do you serve? Mm-hmm. And when I figured out who my people were, my audience, who I wanted to serve, boy, things got a lot easier, mm-hmm. But it didn't come overnight. Let me go to Philip, then Sarah, then we'll have Chris. You'll get the last word, our fearless leader. Go ahead, Philip.
Yeah, I'd echo completely what you said, Jan. I think this point about, to use Sarah's quote, it's not a singular event that helps people to get to that sense of purpose that we recognize is important in both leadership and in everyday life, most definitely. It's a journey, and I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. So so I think it's great just to kind of experience people's stories in this book and use that as a kind of a mirror or some kind of a gateway into your own reflection, as we were speaking of earlier, which I think is always a valuable thing, and we probably don't have enough time to do of these days. So great project, delighted that my partners and I have been able to contribute to this, and just a wonderful project with some wonderful people. So thanks, Jan. Thanks, Chris. Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks, Philip. Well said, my friend. Sarah?
Well, they say that you're the product of the people you hang around. And I think it's been amazing that Chris has managed to pool 20 like-minded in many ways, but very different individuals together. And it's been an absolute pleasure getting to know everyone. I've read most of the chapters as they're edited and coming through the Dropbox. And it's just been amazing getting to know each individual on that deeper level by reading the chapter. And I'm really excited about how many people this book is going to help, not just through reading it, but also all the charities that we're able to support with fundraising and with the book sales as well.
Yeah. Very good. And Chris, the last word.
I'm just thrilled as to what we've achieved, to be honest. The saying, do all the things you can for all the people you can, to help in all the ways you can, whenever you can, however you can, is something that I believe in very strongly. And the way in which I think the book will help the reader, no matter, as Sarah said, where you want to dip into the book, and where you don't want to dip into the book, but also the charities, I feel like all 20 of us with Karen's support are going to help achieve that. And that's something I think all of us should be really pleased with.
Yeah. And there's the book. And when we post this and this gets recorded, we'll make sure we put a link there. This comes out April 9th. And it'll be in the UK and the US, everywhere, right, Chris?
That's right, yes. It's going to global distribution. So if people register for a copy of the book in the link that we'll be providing them, they will then get links to the order details for their local region. So the shipping will be affordable.
Yeah. Well, very good. Well, again, I really appreciate all three of you coming on, representing all 20 of us. And I guess a special shout out to Karen and the 17 other authors that are out there. And again, for those of you listening live and those of you that will view the recorded version, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Jan. Thanks for hosting us.
You're welcome. Yeah, bye-bye, thanks. Everybody.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Chris.